Hey everyone, and welcome to the Property Podcast. It's Rob B with Rob D, and it's episode 213. And this week, we're looking at everything you need to know about leaseholds.
Yes, we are. It's something that people get very nervous about, the whole issue of leasehold. A lot of people like the idea of flats, but the concept of leasehold puts them off, or they don't know what they should be looking for. Well, we're going to be not only addressing all of that, but we'll be turning it around and talking about how you can make money from leaseholds as well. So all of that coming up, as well as the news story and the resource that you are accustomed to receiving from us every week. But first, we just need to give a quick shout out to our meetups around the country. 40 of them, count them, and beyond the country, I should say as well. They were last Thursday, and Rob, you were putting yourself in the shoes of one of our lovely meetup leaders and actually running the King's Cross meetup yourself.
Yeah, I apologise if you went for the disorganisation because it was me by myself and ended up just talking to everyone instead. But it was a great event. But Rob, let's cut to the chase. I said last week, Scotland versus England, who's going to have the most people turn up? How many did you have in Edinburgh?
We had 63, I am reliably informed, in Edinburgh. Does that seal it for us?
Oh, fantastic. I had 64. No, you're joking. well, we definitely had over 50, but I think you've pipped us there. So well done, Edinburgh. Yeah, King's Cross was great. Lots of newbies there. Loads and loads of newbies. And a great mix of experience. There wasn't a typical investor. So many interesting stories as well from some of the investors. So really good meetup. Really nice venue as well, the King's Cross venue. Nice pub, nice place to spend an evening, especially when it's nice weather. So yeah, all in all, a good evening. But Rob, you had what sounds of it a very successful evening north of the border.
Yeah, and it could have been even more successful or a complete disaster because it was being held in a casino. So luckily, people weren't buying me too many drinks. Otherwise, it could have. I got an Uber there. I could have been walking home if things hadn't gone my way. But no, I stayed away from the tables and everything else and just stuck to talking property. But it was a great meetup. Well done to Karen and Bill. They got a huge number of people there. And I really enjoyed it because there was loads for me to learn. I always learn stuff from every meetup. But there was especially lots to learn this time because we did our episode on Scotland recently, so we did a bit of prep for that. But geographically, I don't know it as well as other areas. And there's also so many differences as well. So there's lots of differences on the letting side. And on the buying side, as we talked about, the whole process is completely different. So while I knew what that process was, by talking to lots of people who've been through it multiple times, and there's some very experienced people down there as well, you really get those little insights into the details of it. So I thoroughly enjoyed it. Thank you to everyone who turned up for that one. Do keep supporting the Edinburgh meetup, or there's Glasgow as well, if you'd like to get along to that one. But really fantastic meetup. And Rob, I was very glad to hear that we didn't mess anything up in our Scotland episode. I was really worried that we would offend someone. Somebody said that we pronounced Ayrshire wrong, but other than that, we did okay. So sigh of relief all round.
Yeah, we edited out us doing our Scottish impressions, though we didn't do those really. I'm only joking. We do cut it fine, Rob. And as we do, we better move on. But before we do, you've got something big coming up in 2 weeks, Rob, and it's not a holiday.
No, the holiday will come soon after. No, my book is coming out in 2 weeks' time. It's called How to Be a Landlord. That gives away what it's about. Won't talk about it anymore now, but we've got a couple of lettings-themed episodes coming up in the next couple of weeks. We'll talk about those at the end of this show. So those episodes are going to be to celebrate the book coming out. There's going to be lots of cool stuff going on for the first week. So if it's the kind of book you want to buy, you should definitely be buying it straight away because you'll get even more. A lot more on that next week.
Very exciting. Okay, so our news story of the week, unfortunately, isn't as exciting, but important to know. A little bit depressing, really, Rob, this one.
Yeah, I put this in my newsletter the other week, and I keep sort of coming back to it and thinking about this, because I think it's really quite worrying. So it's from the BBC. The headline is, Household Savings Ratio Falls to Record Low, it says ONS. And the savings ratio is now 3.3%. So I don't know exactly how it's calculated, but I think basically this is like something like people save roughly 3.3% of their income, which is the lowest level since records began in 1963. So obviously that's not a good thing in itself. But what I find particularly worrying is mortgages are cheaper for most people than they have been before, or they probably ever will be again. So you've got lots of people who are on trackers. They've been sitting on those trackers since before the crash. They've gone right down. They're paying next to nothing on their mortgage. Yet the savings rate is still that low. So what's going to happen when interest rates go up? I think there's data around about the state of the economy, and some of it looks quite good. But I think fundamentally that is very concerning.
It is. But there is no incentive to save. That's the problem, because saving rates are so low. So are people doing something else with their money? I don't know. Maybe they're just spending it, which would make this very, very worrying. It links quite nicely back to last week's episode, where we looked at interest rates and what you need to know for when they do rise. So if you missed that one, go and listen to it. Really important. And I think this news story links in quite nicely with it. So this week's show notes, if you want to pick up the news story, are at thepropertyhub.net/leaseholds. And that is exactly what we're talking about this week.
Yes, we are. So I mentioned this back at the start. If you're buying a flat, normally it's going to be leasehold. In England, at least in Scotland, where I am at the moment, leasehold doesn't exist, I don't believe, or at least it's not common. But yeah, leasehold, it's something that you'll come into contact with quite frequently. It's something that a lot of people are worried about. It puts them off buying flats, which otherwise could be great investments for them. And a lot of times, fear comes from lack of knowledge. So we're going to put that straight by talking about what you need to know, what you need to check, how you need to make sure that the lease isn't going to affect the value of your property. But before we do all that, let's get right back to basics and talk about, well, what is a leasehold?
Okay, so what is a leasehold? Well, you don't own the land. You lease the land for a period of time. And at the end of that time, it reverts back to the freeholder if you don't renew. Important point here, though, you have the right to renew. So they can't say, oh, no, you're not allowed to renew. You always have the right to renew a leasehold. Typical lease terms range from, when you got a new property, from 100 years all the way up to 999 years. So it really does vary. You pay ground rent every year as a payment for the lease. Now, again, the amount you pay will vary. Sometimes it's a peppercorn rent and it's a very, very small amount. You find that with older properties. But typically on a new build today, it will be anywhere from sort of £200 to £300. You can get below and above that, and we'll talk about that a little bit later. Now, in the lease, it has conditions about what you can and can't do. For example, I was looking at a property in Liverpool, and I wanted to use it for Airbnb, but the lease said I couldn't, so I walked away from a potential deal. Didn't get that far down the line, because that was one of the first things to look for. So the lease is really important to check over, particularly if you're looking to do something different other than just live in it. Now, buy-to-let normally is accepted in leases, but you may have to pay a small amount to have tenants checked when you move them in. So check your lease for that. If you're doing something a little bit more exotic than buy-to-let, then definitely check the lease, because you may find there are some restrictions there. Now, leasehold, you probably think of flats, and that's right. That's what it normally is for. But there are more and more houses being built with leaseholds too. So not that that's a bad thing necessarily. There are advantages to it. That means the communal areas, particularly if you've got green spaces in your development, will be maintained and to a high standard. But it's just worth knowing. Don't just assume it's a house, so it's automatically freehold. It may be leasehold. So that's what it is. But what you need to know, what's important?
Well, a few things around the length of the lease are really important to know. And Rob's already mentioned the first one, which is that lease extension is always possible. It's not that after 100 years, they're just going to say, no, we're taking it back now. You have the right in law to extend always. And that extension follows a set formula. So when you extend, you're going to have to pay more for it. That makes sense. You pay more and you get more years. But they can't just say, okay, you want to extend for another 100 years? That'll be £1 million, please. There's a formula that gets used. And we'll talk about this more a little bit later. So you can always extend. But also very important to know is that that formula changes when you get to 80 years remaining or lower. So it's almost like there's one formula you use for 80 years plus. And then as soon as you hit 80, there's something called marriage value, which kicks in, which means you end up paying a lot more than you would have done before. So that is the first number that gets really important. It's that 80-year mark. Then there's another number that becomes important, which is around mortgages. So generally, although this changes between lender, generally, when you get to under about 60 years, it starts getting hard to get a mortgage. So you'll sometimes see properties that look like they're very, very cheap. But then when you look into it a bit more, it turns out they've only got like 40 years left on the lease or something like that. And that means that, of course, you would then have to pay for the extension of the lease. So maybe it's not as cheap as you first think, although we'll be talking about that later as well. So those are your key points. You can always extend, but it gets more expensive at about 80, and it starts getting hard to get a mortgage under about 60. So that's the absolute essentials of what you need to know. But then once you know the basics, you need to know what you're going to check before you buy the property. So if you find something you're interested in that's leasehold, you should have a checklist to go through to see if it makes sense for you.
So first, and probably most obvious, is how long is remaining on that lease. Now, my personal philosophy is I look for leases of 125 years or more. Now, the majority of my properties are leasehold because the majority of my properties are apartments. So when I go for an apartment, I look for 125 or above. I've not picked that number up. There is some logic to it, and it's quite simple. You get properties sold new with 100-year leases. So at 125, if I go through a complete mortgage term of 25 years, it's still 100 years when I sell it. I'm going to have no problem at all selling it because that's standard. 100 years is fine. And that's really my simple rationale. So 125 or above. It doesn't mean I won't look at it at 120. Of course I will if the deal's right. But that tends to be my marker. If it's under 125, it just makes me look at it a bit closer. If it's under, say, 110, I probably won't do it. So 125 or above doesn't mean it's a bad investment under 110. It's just my personal philosophy on investing. Now, ground rent is another one to look at. It will increase over time. Just look at how and when it increases. A lot happening with ground rents, probably worth a podcast in itself. You probably feel, oh, that's going to be an exciting one. But it will be worth knowing a little bit more about it. To touch on it briefly, ground rent in the past has been taken advantage of by some developers. One of the schemes that we've seen in the past is that ground rents would double every 10 years. Big developers like Taylor Wimpey were doing it at one point. That's all been cracked down on now. And actually, solicitors are being sued for allowing that to go through because it should have been pointed out to the people buying the properties. Anyway, that's for another podcast. The good news is, though, that because of this crackdown, the amount that people can charge for a leasehold is coming down if they want to use a mortgage. So mortgage companies now are being directed by the CML to say, don't lend on properties over a certain pound notes value of ground rent. And that's great because that means developers no longer can just charge what they want, because if they want to attract mortgage buyers, they have to play within the rules. So ground rent in the past was something that developers were a little bit naughty with, taking advantage of. It's been in the news a bit recently as well, but the crackdown has already begun. The headlines are a little bit late on this one. Once all the information is filtered through, and we know exactly what we're playing with, we'll talk about it again in the podcast, but all you need to know is, in the past, some people are a bit naughty. They're getting a hand slapped now, and it seems to be improving.
Very interesting. I didn't know that that was being resolved as quickly as it was. I'd seen the headlines about what's going wrong, but I didn't know that it was starting to go right. So good to hear that, and we will cover that more as it develops. So that's the length of the lease term and the ground rent that you need to be checking. But there's a couple of other things to check as well. As Rob mentioned earlier, the lease basically is a big document saying what you can and can't do and what the freeholder can and can't do. So there'll be conditions in there, and it's really important to look through for any restrictions that matter to you. So there could be a term saying that you can't rent the property out at all. Now, that's going to be exceptionally rare. That's not something you're going to come across very often. But there could be something saying that you can't rent the property out to certain types of tenant. Or there could be really onerous restrictions on what the occupant of the property has to do that would be a nightmare for you to actually try and enforce with your tenants. It's worth having a quick look through, and it's definitely worth getting your solicitor to look over the lease in detail. You'll find that solicitors charge a little bit more for leasehold properties than they do for freehold, and that's because they need to spend time going through this lease. So make sure that they do, and then chat it through with them and make sure that there's nothing in there that's concerning for you. And there's something else to look at is the service charge. So the service charge is a bit different. That's nothing to do with the lease per se, but with leasehold properties, there is always or almost always a service charge to cover maintenance of all the common parts and the upkeep of the roof and all that kind of thing. There's going to be a service charge. When you're buying a property, you and your solicitor should also be looking at the last few years of service charge records to see what that charge is. See if it seems reasonable. See if it's gone up a lot recently. See if they've got some kind of reserve fund. So not strictly relating to the lease, but still very much relevant for most leasehold properties. So that's your checklist. That's what you should be looking at before you buy a leasehold property. But say you've bought one already, and say you didn't follow Rob's rule of thumb about what the lease term should be at the start, and you're in a situation where you want to extend the lease. I think it's worth running through that process, Rob, because that's something that a lot of people, I think, are concerned about, and they don't really know how to go about it. So maybe if we talk that process through, then it will sound a little bit less intimidating.
Well, first of all, and something I've only learned recently, is that extensions are always for an additional 90 years, with no ground rent payable for this new 90 years. So that's the term you'll go for, and no ground rent for that period, which is great. You need to get a specialist valuer to help with the value of the extension, and a solicitor to serve notice on the landlord offering terms and how much to pay. The landlord, the person who owns this lease, has 2 months to respond, either accepting or stating their own terms. But Rob, it might not be straightforward. There might be a little jiggery-pokery and a bit of negotiation to do.
Yeah, it's going to be pretty unusual if you just make an offer to the landlord and they say, yep, fair enough. Normally, they're going to have a different idea of how much they want to be getting for the lease extension. So you get into this negotiation period. It's this kind of thing that makes solicitors very happy because they get to argue with each other. So your solicitor and their solicitor will probably send passive-aggressive letters to each other arguing about it. And then you might be able to come to a decision. So you'll have had your valuation. The landlord might then get their own valuation. And then maybe you can find some kind of middle point there that you're both happy with. If you can't come to that decision, then after the negotiation has been going on for 2 months, you can then apply to the tribunal. It's called the first tier tribunal. You can apply to them for a decision. So you basically go to them, say, look, we can't decide. Can you come to a judgment for us? They will then look at the evidence. So they'll look at the valuations and any other relevant documents, and they will then make a decision. And when they make that decision, it's final. So either party can decide to go. So if you think your landlord's being unreasonable, you can force it to go to a tribunal, and then whatever they say goes. So actually, when you look at the process like that, it's not that intimidating. Yes, there is cost involved, because as well as paying for whatever the amount is that's finally negotiated, you've got to pay for the specialist valuation in the first place, and you've got to pay for your solicitor, and you might end up paying for the tribunal as well. So there's cost involved, but the process isn't that scary, and it's all very clearly laid out. And you can see now why extension is always possible, and why landlords can't just charge however much they want to. Although it's not intimidating, though, it can take a long time. So when going back through it, it's like, well, you need to get this done, then you need to do that, and then wait, and then they do this, and then you wait, and then you go to the tribunal, and they decide, and then you wait. And so all in all, it could easily take a year or more from the start to the finish of the process. If you're lucky, you could get it done in a couple of months, but a year or more would not be unreasonable. So importantly, what this means is if you're getting very close to the 80 years, and this is for a property that you're buying, then get the vendor to start the process and then transfer the right to extend over to you, because you can't extend a lease during your first 2 years of ownership. So if you're buying a property now, which has got 81 years remaining, then you're going to be in a bit of trouble, because in 2 years' time, by the time you can start, you'll have 79 years. That means you're below the magic 80 years, and it's going to cost you a lot more money. However, if the vendor starts the process, then they can transfer it over to you because it goes with the building rather than with the owner. So just knowing that little thing there could save you a lot of money. Ideally, of course, if it's a property that you already own, you don't want to be cutting it that fine. By the time you get down to, say, 85 years, you want to be starting that process to make sure you get it done in good time.
And I'm sure there's many people listening to this podcast with leasehold properties who have them in the 80s now and probably didn't know that when it gets below 80, it's going to be more costly. So I bet you got your lesson today. Right. So we may have saved you a bit of money there. But let's make you some money. That's always popular. So how can you make money from leases? Well, a simple-ish strategy, simple in concept anyway, is buying properties with a short lease, extending them, and then either keeping them and extracting value from them or flipping them on. Why would you do that? Well, if you buy a property under 60 years, as Rob said, you're almost certainly going to be buying with cash, or with bridging finance until you've done the extension. Now, what you could do is buy the property, which will be less than its market rate because of the short lease. Well, it should be at least anyway. And say, right, okay, it's worth this. The lease will cost me this. And then after that, the value will be this. So whatever it is, the A plus B, if the cost of buying plus the cost of extension is less than what the value will be in the future, then you've got a good deal. And people carry out that strategy very, very well. Simplistic, but you need to be confident on your values, exactly what you're going to be getting charged for your lease and what it's going to be worth when you go through this process. But people do make money from it. So not one that's probably on many people's radars because it's a little bit niche, but it's an interesting one. And I know people have done well from it. If some of you are shouting out Del Boy's line right now, we're going to be millionaires next year from this one, I hasten to add, it's not mind-blowing returns or profits, but it may be worth doing. Certainly considering. You might not have been on your radar before. Want to add, want to investigate. Another way, even more simplistic way of making money from leaseholds is buying the freeholds and the ground rents becoming an income stream for you. And also when people renew their leases, you make money too. Definitely a investment, definitely a way to generate income. The returns though, so the yield if you like, in terms of the money you put in to buy it for the what you'll get in the ground rent, are actually quite poor compared to property returns. So you're not going to do it for that. Often people, when they buy a new build, will get offered a lease to buy because the developer will build it out and then look to sell it on to bring some more cash in. You will be, by right, offered that leasehold first. You get first refusal on it. What I would say, though, is that in most cases, it tends to be an emotional pull rather than a smart financial decision to buy it because people like the thought of owning it. But remember, emotion doesn't always make a good investment. So buying freeholds, I know some people who do it, not one for me, just can't see the returns in it. But at least, you know, again, it exists as a strategy.
So there you go. Everything you need to know about leaseholds, if not everything, then at least enough to help you understand what it is. Make sure that you don't make any mistakes when you're buying a leasehold property. Get you over your fear of leases wasting away until you had to extend them, and also a little extra how to turn it around and make money from them as well. So hopefully when you come across a leasehold property, you won't immediately be put off. It's not going to be for everyone. Some people still aren't going to go for it, but at least now you can make an informed decision. And I'm actually doing a lease extension at the moment. It's the first one I've ever done. Funnily enough, similar to what Rob was saying earlier about people who've owned property a long time and haven't sort of seen where their leases have got down to. This is a property that I've owned for probably about 10 years now. And when I bought it, the lease was in the mid to high 90s. And that seemed like a really long time. Now, in the blink of an eye, 10 years has gone by and we're down to sort of about 85. And I'm thinking, well, I should be starting the extension process now because I don't want to get down to that magic 80 years. So it can come round quicker than you think. So we'll maybe do another episode about it when I've finished that process, or at least give a little update to see if there's anything useful that I've learned that we can pass on. But it could be a useful lesson if you do have leasehold properties and they're not new builds where you know that the lease is for a very long time. Do go and check and start that process sooner rather than later, because it never gets cheaper. You might not want to go through the process. It might not be the most fun thing that you've ever done, but now is always the best time.
And if you don't want the hassle, because most people don't, and you're buying now, just use the rule I use, 125 years or more, and you'll be fine. Of course, people will be attracted to certain deals with shorter leases, and that's fine too. But you just have to put that into the equation and make sure you're prepared to do it when the time comes. And you know what we're prepared to do? Give you a resource of the week and tell you what's coming up next week. But before we do, we have to acknowledge this fine, outstanding human being that's called Jack Leaf. Because you know what, Rob? He's left us a review. I've been listening to the Robs now for a couple of years, and I'm baffled by how they manage to deliver topical and quality content on a weekly basis, particularly given how outrageously busy they are. Rob D and Rob B have a knack of explaining sometimes complex subjects in a succinct and digestible manner, which makes listening to them a pleasure. I'm extremely grateful to them for their free education they've provided me with. I attended my first meetup in St. Albans last week, and I couldn't recommend them more highly. Simply a bunch of genuine people with a shared passion, talking about what they love. Thank you, guys, and please keep going forever. Well, we'll try our best, Jack. We seem to find enough subjects to keep talking about and to keep us busy, and going to these meetups gives us lots of stuff to use as well, because people ask us questions and think, oh, that's a good podcast. They'll tell us a story and think, oh, we could do something with that too. So, yeah, we're not going anywhere just yet, especially when we get nice reviews like that.
Yep, love that. Thank you very much. Keep the reviews coming. And well done for getting along to a meetup. Worth mentioning that I get emails all the time sort of saying things like, oh, do you know a sorcerer in this area? Do you know a solicitor in that area? Normally, I don't, because there's a lot of areas. Any one person, me included, isn't going to have all that much knowledge. If you get along to a meetup in that area, though, I can pretty much guarantee there is going to be someone there who can recommend you or point you in the right direction for what you want. It's the absolute best way of getting that local expertise. So whether it's in your own area or in an area that you're targeting to investment, it's a fantastic way of getting that local knowledge. So just go to thepropertyhub.net/meetups. It's not too early to book for next month. Make it happen. Just had to get another little meetup plug in there, Rob, because they are so valuable.
Well, I think we're allowed to plug them because, one, they're free. So along with the meetup leaders, we do it at our own cost and time to put it together. And you'd be mad not to take advantage of it, mostly. That's the main thing, because there are 40 of them. You've heard how highly everyone talks about them. And what I really like is if you go to one meetup and you think, that was okay, go to another one because it'll be completely different because they've got their own unique personality. And that's what I really love about the meetups, especially going to different ones, is that every single one is different in a good way. You've got some smaller groups, you've got some huge groups, you've got stuff in between. The venues make a difference to the event as well. So check out a few and find your favourite. But a favourite of the show, Rob, is always the resource of the week. And this is an extension of a resource that you got me into, which I absolutely love now, which is GetPocket.
Yeah, Pocket is fantastic. So that's a tool for clipping things to read later. So if you're reading a blog, you're like, well, this looks great, but I don't have the time to go through it now. You can just save it to Pocket and read it later, including offline. So if you're on the tube or something like that, you can go through and read all these blog posts without a data connection. So super handy. But Rob, you've discovered this tool called Explore Pocket that takes it a step further.
Yeah, well, link to it in the show notes, which is at thepropertyhub.net/leaseholds. But this is great because blogs are a fantastic source of knowledge. I listen to podcasts. That's probably my number one source of knowledge and what I spend my time on using. But blogs have now right up there with where I spend my time in consuming information, because there's some really, really good stuff out there. People realize now that blogs need to be of a high quality to get interest. And there's lots of high quality blogs out there. And basically what Pocket have done, I've created a Google for blogs. So you go to the Get Pocket Explore, type in something you're interested in, which if you listen to this, may be property, but it could be about anything, and it will give you popular blogs on that subject. And how do you know they're popular? Well, you look at how many times it's been saved. Really, really interesting, really useful. I've only just dipped my toe into the Explore part of it, but if you haven't looked at Pocket itself as an app, it's absolutely fantastic. I use it all the time now. It's one of my most used apps. So I can't believe I've not got into it sooner. Really, really good. Check that out. And then once you're using that, go and check out Explore as well. If you like consuming blogs, two awesome resources for you.
Yeah, very cool, because I'm a fun-loving kind of guy to test it out. I just typed in interest rates and found lots of interest, what looks like really interesting posts about interest rates and blogs I'd never heard of, and just saved a few of those. So there you go. You're feeding my geekiness there.
Well, we'll feed it even more next week, Rob, because we're talking about a subject we're both passionate about for obvious reasons, which is lettings. But we're going to look at a specific subject and one I think everybody will like.
Yeah, a couple of lettings episodes coming up around my book coming out in a couple of weeks' time. Next week's episode is called How to Create the Perfect Rental Property. So if you're buying a property and you're planning on doing a little bit of work to it, how do you set it up so it's highly lettable, it'll let really quickly, and it won't cause you any hassle down the road? Well, that is what we're going to be talking about in next week's show.
We are. And a little note, Rob, and I've not told you this, so I'll share the news on air, but a huge thank you to everyone who keeps supporting the show. The download numbers keep on increasing and increasing. And last month, new record for us, we got downloaded 150,000 times in 1 month.
Wow. So that's awesome.
That is super cool. We're on course for 2017 to be downloaded a few million times. when because the rate of growth. So that's just a bit bonkers. I don't know who you are. I don't know why you're as crazy as us about property, but I'm glad you are. So thank you so much for all the people who get behind a podcast, who talk so highly of it, who support it, who leave reviews, who tell other people about it. I asked at the meetups last night, how did you hear about the podcast? Someone told me about it. I asked someone else, how did you hear about the podcast? Someone told me about it. That person who told them about it was there. Who told you? Someone told me. So you're clearly spreading the word. So thank you. It's absolutely awesome that you're all ambassadors of the podcast. You keep sending people to the podcast. We'll keep delivering them. It's a win-win. We love it. Thank you so much.
Yes, we do. We love it so much. We do it twice a week. So we'll be back with Ask Rob and Rob on Tuesday, answering another couple of your questions, then back talking about how to create the perfect rental property next Thursday. Until then, have a fantastic week and we'll see you soon. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to The Property Podcast. For show notes, all our past episodes, and to leave a review, go to thepropertyhub.net/podcast.